Therapy Insiders is brought to you by Verve, makers of the Arc, a revolutionary neck pain relief and postural support device. Available now at www.goarcnow.com and by Edge Mobility System. Give your mobility the edge. Available at www.edgemobsys.com.
Hello, welcome back to Therapy Insiders. I'm Dr. Gene Schirakerbrad here with Dr. Joe Palmer and Dr. Erson Religioso. How are you guys doing?
Doing good, Gene.
I'm doing great, Gene.
So we had a really interesting podcast last time on CrossFit, but this time around we're going to kind of switch gears and talk about a topic that probably doesn't get too much light of day, but still an important one, and I'll let Dr. E introduce our guest.
All right. Well, Dr. Sandy Hilton, she's doctor now, because when I originally started following her on Twitter and communicating with her on Twitter, she was just going for a doctorate, and that seemed like a long, hard road. But Dr. Sandy Hilton is a women's health therapist, and she's very much into modern pain science, as I am. She was even offered a position with NOI Group, right?
Yeah.
And she even turned them down. That's how big Sandy Hilton is now. She turned down David Butler. And she does women's health in Chicago, and I thought this would be a great topic because, you know, she's part of the pelvic mafia, hashtag pelvic mafia on Twitter, so I thought we could talk about all that and pain science to boot and, you know, how she integrates manual therapy with pain science.
Before we start that, I really want to know what the pelvic mafia is and how that name came to be.
Oh, that is... a Canadian physio that is an ankle specialist, and I can't remember. Julie Weeb has it on her blog post.
Of course. Pelvic Mafia would be an ankle specialist. Why not?
Was an ankle specialist, but he said that we needed a hashtag that distinguished us beyond the NS, and not safe for work, because what happened was he was at work, and he opened a link that we had put up about lower extremity strengthening and coordination that happened to be tied to vaginas and things like that. And he seemed to think that his work would not be fond of him opening pornographic material at the clinic, is what he called it. So he called it the hashtag pelvic mafia so that everyone would be warned to not open any link we put up on their work computers. But we all loved it so much, we thought, that's exceptionally awesome, and just took it on.
That's an interesting story. Completely not what I was thinking, but I'm glad I asked. Sort of.
Yeah. That's what happens, see? And that's why it's there. So, you know, if you ask anyone with the pelvic mafia a question, you're probably going to get more than you expected.
Absolutely. That's what I was hoping for. So Sandy, I really want to know is women's health. I know around me there's maybe a couple clinics, at least a couple that I know of, and I know I talked to Erson about this as well, is that there just seems like there's not a ton of practitioners, whereas there's probably more cases than really get seen. Do you feel like there's a huge population that's kind of underserved because there's just not enough clinicians for this field?
Definitely, there is a huge population that is underserved. We can use all physical therapists knowing how to do good screens for pelvic floor dysfunction. I personally think that should be part of the last year of PT school is learning at least how to do a good screen. And then knowing who to refer to. We do need more practitioners. Estimated stats are about 1 in 3 women have some sort of incontinence that doesn't even touch the pelvic pain community, and we don't have good statistics on the men. And to go back to your CrossFit from last time, there is still a portion of the community that thinks that if you're working out really hard and you pee on yourself, that that's okay. But it's one of the few things in physical therapy that we can say we have level one evidence on that we can eliminate the symptoms of incontinence in over 86% of the people within 12 visits. There's not much we have for that. I think we really need to push it a lot more. Okay. It's an international problem, so the rest of the world has the same issue we have. We got to get people talking about it.
Really. Yeah, that's very interesting. Definitely we'll have to follow up on that peeing on yourself while doing CrossFit. I'm sure there's a conversation in there somewhere. But, so we don't get any more angry
emails.
That
was really big in social media. Yeah, that was big in social media last year. It was like some sort of badge of honor.
Yeah, we'll follow up, try to avoid some angry emails, but... I want to know what is, and as best as you can describe it, obviously over a podcast, what is a good screen for clinicians, even like us that are manual therapists that see patients, do a lot of hands-on stuff and try to listen to them? I'm sure there's stuff in terms of women's health or even pelvic health that we miss that just gets kind of by the cracks. So what are some foundational things that you would expect in a screen?
Some of them come directly from the red flags we know to ask already in orthopedics. So with anyone with spinal pain, asking if they have any bowel or bladder dysfunction. And that is technically to look at a cauda equina syndrome, but it will also pick up the silent people that have incontinence and have been told by their clinicians that they should just expect that as they get older. So if you ask that question... and just routinely ask, do you have any bowel or bladder problems? You'll get some people at least thinking about it. I love that one of the EMR programs just put the original Oswestry back in their database because it asks about sex, which is also a really good screening question. So that 2001 revision of the Oswestry took the sex question off, and that needs to just... go away and go back to the original and ask the question, because if you're having pain with intercourse, for guys that's usually mechanical low back pain or some other problem that's going to need medical assistance. For women, it's should be an immediate referral to their doc and physical therapy, because we can make that go away too.
I remember during one of my continuing ed courses, we talked about the cauda equina stuff, and that question, do you have bowel or bladder issues? And I feel like the point that was made was that question kind of gets asked in passing and very quickly, and I think most emphasis is on the bladder. And what I heard during that course was that a lot of it is constipation as well, and people don't really think about it. Is, you know, you have to follow up, not just kind of ask. Sometimes you have to really tell people what that means. Is, you know, are you having problems going to the bathroom in terms of, are you constipated, or are you having trouble relieving or going and having some urine flow?
Mm-hmm. Can you start a stream of urine easily? Can you pee like the guy from Airplane? Whatever you need to say it to make people comfortable with it, because we tend not to really want to talk about that. And there are some settings where it's just impractical to ask. So if you're in a busy gym and you ask your new evaluation if they're having any problems with bowel or bladder issues, they're going to tell you no just because they don't want anyone to hear, most likely. But the fact that you ask them gets it thinking in their head that maybe that's something they should talk to their physician about. So even if we start doing that, we're going to get the conversation out there a little bit more. I just would challenge the professionals to not be afraid to ask the question. But don't ask the question if it's not. If they say yes and start answering you, you need to be prepared for that information and know where to refer them if that's not your gig.
Yeah, something I got from my wife, because she used to do women's health before, you know, she had the much harder job of homeschooling our four kids and raising our kids. She told me to ask, because everyone gets asked, like Gene says, you know, bowel or bladder. It's just kind of like, you know, night pain, whatever. They're just like going through this checklist that they're expected to say no to. But she said that you should really revise your questions to say, not like a loss, because everyone always thinks a complete loss of control, but even an increase in frequency or urgency. Mm-hmm. And I think that doesn't get asked a lot. So when I start asking that, I start getting a lot more yeses, or, oh, that's not normal, or, you know, because there should be a certain amount of, you know, you should go a certain amount of times, or you shouldn't void just a little bit many times a day.
Right. 20 minutes. That is a hugely important thing. I think that a lot of people in the community don't know what normal is, which is exactly...
Including me.
It is the normal human bladder takes 2 to 4 hours to fill. So if you're peeing more frequently than that, there's probably something going on. There's a couple issues where it wanted out. Like if all you've been doing is drinking a lot of caffeine and the chemistry inside your bladder is really kind of gross, a very clever bladder will decide that you should empty it. So you'll get a signal to need to go pee because it's really concentrated.
Speaking of pee, on a side note, because this might be the only time I'll get to say it in the podcast without feeling weird about it, my son has peed by himself 3 days in a row.
Yay!
I know, and you know, usually as you go through life, there's very few instances that you think to yourself, I'm celebrating in the bathroom with my wife because somebody just went...
Because someone just went in the toilet.
Toilet. So we're jumping up and down with our arms up going, yay, pee-pee. When does that ever happen?
That's a milestone. It's happened actually several times with me. But
congratulations, Urson. I hope it happens several times
with my kids. With my kids. Yes, what a joyous occasion.
I want a beer for you later. My children made a promise to not ask anyone in a public restroom if they were having any problems.
Have they kept it?
I kept it. Well, they said that I couldn't. I couldn't go up to the stall and say, hey, lady, I realize you were only peeing for about 3 seconds. Here's my card. I've held to that promise, but I did use it in stand-up comedy occasionally.
That's pretty good. Well, I think this is, if we end this podcast now, it's already been successful. We've talked about people peeing on themselves while exercising, an airplane reference, and now cheering while peeing.
Well done.
Yep.
So, Sandy, do you feel like physicians are aware of how successful physical therapy can be in this population?
No, I don't. And I think we should get into the physician training programs to give them some information. I think there's a lot of misinformation about public health out there, just in general. If you just watch television, it's Elmeron and the other medications for urgency and frequency. But they don't mention that physical therapy done by physical therapists is very successful, and all of the diapers and pads, they also don't mention it. So light bladder leakage is a very big thing in advertising right now, but they're not mentioning that it's like your roof. You don't have to just put a pretty little bucket under the leak. You could actually fix that. We need to do better at that. I would love it if the APTA would just spend a bajillion dollars and do some good advertising, and just blast the market out with what physical therapy is capable of doing.
You Absolutely. And a lot of people.
Maybe if we had mandatory membership like other professions.
Maybe. Yeah. That'd be kind of cool.
Yes, hot button topics.
Yeah, we could talk about that some other time. Sandy, I have a question for you. So, you know, you're a manual therapist just like us, and I know you've delved into pain science or jumped headfirst just like I have. Mm-hmm. You know, I took one of Butler's first pain science courses way back in 2002 in Maryland. And so how has that changed your interactions with patients and even changed, you know, the way you touch people or, you know?
Fun question, and I think it has made my job so much easier. I play around on Twitter with the hashtag of lazy PT, because if and that goes back to my neuro training, if I can get the person to work harder, then I don't have to work very hard and they get better faster, as long as it's in the right way. But the more I'm doing, the less they're doing, and that gets me tired and them not much better. I think it's the same way with incorporating pain science into manual therapy, because I can help them understand that while a part of them hurts, that part of them may not be the reason that they hurt. And if we can go beyond where you feel the pain to what pain is and make it not threatening and really reconceptualize it as a protective response, then they start moving again. And I think what we're going to find consistently in the research is that it's moving that's the thing. And whatever we need to do to get them feeling safe, having a credible evidence of safety, is going to decrease that protective response. So it's faster, I think.
So the majority of clinicians, at least in our world, right? Manual therapy, we're a subspecialty of a specialty, essentially, right? We're a little niche of orthopedics. So most patients will come to an orthopedic physical therapist, hopefully, with some kind of pain. Mm-hmm. And it's not always incontinence or constipation that they'll talk about. They'll talk about some kind of pain in the pelvis, pain in the low back. I know after taking a dry needling course, I was really fascinated to find out some of the referral patterns that can be coming from pelvic floor issues. What are some of the common referral patterns you find that people think it might be the low back or it might be an SI joint, but in fact it's something more pelvic floor related?
More pelvic floor related, really anything from the belly button down to the mid thigh can be referrals from the autonomic nervous system and the crosstalk through the organs to the spine, or from any of the nerves, the ilioinguinal, iliohypogastric, genital femoral, all through the buttock, all the pudendal nerves, certainly. Just the whole, from the belly button to the mid-thigh, front and back.
So how do you help differentiate between a nerve pain from L5 versus something more pelvic floor related? Do you have the quality of the pain? Do you have...
Well, we ask them where they hurt. But I screen the spine because I think that, especially in chronic conditions, and I would love to see acute pelvic pain, but I don't. They've usually been hurting on my evals today. Her symptoms started in 2006. So I get chronic persistent pain. But I screen the spine because, and again, it goes back to pain signs. We know that the dorsal root ganglion gets irritated. We know that you've got to treat the entire nerve and up and down a few segments if you're going to try and calm that system down. So screening the spine, screening the hip, and then doing some specific knowing your neuroanatomy and checking out the motor and sensory areas fed by those nerves. And you just, it's a puzzle. You just start untangling it and see what you can do. That's the part that I think is fun. And I think that's part that when people work with pelvic pain, they can get frustrated. I may be a little odd in that when they're really complicated like that, I just think it's a great challenge to try and help this person that's dealing with it's hard to go to work when you can't sit down, when you feel weird because you have to sit on your special cushion and only your chair. That does nasty things to your quality of life and your ability to be doing things that make you happy, which is something that's really going to help to calm down the pain. So it's fun. I don't know if that answered your question. There isn't a good, if I touch you here, I know it's this, because it's not that clean, especially not in persistent pain. There's too much overlap and smudging of pain patterns.
I was going to say too much cortical smudging.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Follow-up question to that would be, and where I was headed is this always, or at what point is it a referral to a specialist? So if somebody's coming into an average physical therapist, I mean that in no demeaning way, just to another physical therapist, can they do something for these patients, or do you recommend a referral to a women's health specialist right away?
I would recommend you ask, that's a really cool question. I would love it if all therapists would feel comfortable saying, you know, doing a good assessment of where do you hurt, where do you feel your pain, and then doing what you're good at. If the symptoms are resolving in one or two visits and they're better than they were when they first came to you, then you're probably on the right track. Not everyone needs an internal assessment, but if it is not getting better, and if it's a woman that has dyspareunia, pain with sex, pain with intercourse, those are probably going to need an internal evaluation. Men with problems sitting that isn't resolving with what you know to do with your spine and hip techniques, they probably need an internal assessment. But sometimes they get better without, and some patients that we see absolutely refuse to have internal evaluations done, and we are not going to force it. So you do the best you can with what you have. They should be getting better every week, just like your back patients.
Can you talk about the prevalence of some of these? Is pelvic pain and dysfunction more prevalent in women, or are they about the same men to women?
The statistics worldwide would say that men probably underreport.
Shocker.
I know. Put out. Come on. Princess, just keep working.
Hashtag pelvic dysfunction.
Hashtag pelvic mafia.
I think that we don't know. That's the best answer. We don't know. People don't report it. There's some cultural issues about not wanting to report. There are some misbeliefs in the medical community around the whole world, not to just pick on the U.S., that say that it doesn't matter. We have people who say, well, you know, if you're over 40 and you want to have sex and it hurts, well, just stop having sex. Problem solved.
Just a whole different problem.
It's a whole different problem. There's a lot of not good information. I think that we honestly don't have a good clue. I suspect there's a whole lot more people with problems than get help. We need better screening, and we need people that are doctors and PTs and massage therapists and personal trainers and athletic trainers that are willing to ask the tough questions about how are you doing, and make the whole body's health an important issue.
The tough question is important, but I think you mentioned this before. It's the follow-up question that is just as important, right? If not more so. So when a patient presents, especially let's say as an example in your clinic, if you have a patient that's been referred to you, what is an average assessment, treatment that you go through with a pelvic floor patient? Because I'm sure, you know, people hear about women's health all the time and really have no idea what that entails, what treatments are like.
Average, let me see. I'll meld together my evals from this week. And I'll make it a guy, because everyone talks about this like it's women. I have a strong neuro and manual therapy background, and I screen the spine. So it starts with a movement assessment and really just a gross assessment of how are you moving? Can you stand on one leg? How about the other leg? Just a classic screening and getting an idea of what kind of muscle guarding or hesitancy they have. Do they trust their own self to move? Because if they're coming in for pelvic pain and there's hesitancy in load bearing on one leg or the other, or weight shifting or eccentric control, then that's going to give me a lot of information before I even touch them on what might be happening around the pelvic girdle, the rotator of the hip. So I try and find out as much as I can from external techniques and musculoskeletal standards before I do any internal work. If this is someone with pelvic pain between the pubic bone and the coccyx and the ischial tuberosities on either side, then I will most likely do an internal assessment to find out whether the muscles of the pelvic floor can contract and relax like they're supposed to, whether the right side matches the left side. Whether they can tell if they're doing it or not. If it's incredibly painful, I won't, like if even touching externally hurts really, really bad, I will not do an internal assessment, because the pelvic floor is really amazing and it's the first thing that tightens up to contract when you're under threat. It's a great study by Vanderbilt. I can't remember the year that came out, but where they showed some people a scary picture, a threatening picture, and the pelvic floor contracted first to protect them. It's terribly clever and probably so you don't pee while you run away. But if they're threatened just at the thought of me touching them, all I'm going to find out is that they hurt, and that doesn't really help.
So after you do some hands-on techniques, obviously, I'm guessing there's some movement retraining for the entire neuroplasticity and retraining the nervous system. And I'm sure there's some exercises. So two-part question for you. First of all, what's the verdict on Kegel exercises, good or bad? And two, is it Kegel exercises or Kegel exercises? For God's sake, can we please clear that up for once and for all?
I think it depends on what side of the country you come from. I call them Kegel, but I'm from the West Coast, and I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I say, I don't even know what we say around here. My wife's from Canada, so she doesn't even count. I think I'd have to ask
Canadian,
her.
She
listens to none of these, right? None of these.
Yeah.
I've heard Kegel more often than Kegel. So I think we could probably call it Kegel.
All right. We'll call him the Kegel then. Good or bad? Is it more complicated than that? Because I know I had a patient come in once. She had some pelvic floor pain. She was a runner. So it was actually a referral from her obturator muscle. So we did some needling on that, then worked her hip. And I was like, well, why don't you try some Kegel exercises? And she went off on me that she, you know, she used to have women's health PT, and they told her that they're, you know, the worst thing ever, that they used to do them all the time. And I was like, all right, listen, do whatever you want with your pelvic floor exercises. Do whatever they told you. Just do what I tell you for running. And we called it at that.
So that was wise. First, this is what I tell my patients. Take your right hand, make a fist as hard as you can. You guys have to play along. If that's what's happening inside your pelvis, that the muscles are already tight, having you contract your hand more is going to be unhelpful. So if the muscles are already lifted up, tight, clenched, whatever you want to call that, doing a Kegel exercise is going to be anti-helpful because you're already contracted. What you would then need to do is learn how to let it relax and selectively control it. So there's a portion of people with pelvic health problems that are already all smooshed up together. They don't need to practice that. They need to stop doing that. Most people, if they're just handed a sheet on how to do a Kegel, see how I'm saying it correctly?
Well done.
They're going to get it wrong. They're going to use their abs, their adductors. There's some people out there that think if you just squeeze your knees together, that strengthens your pelvic floor. We want specificity in exercises everywhere else in the body. We really want it in those muscles too. So most people get them wrong if they're just told squeeze like you're trying not to pee or whatever the common instructions are. And some people are already up and squeezed already. We want them to relax. And some people can't just stop at 10, they're going to do 400. So it depends. The exercise is good. It was done with an internal sensor vaginally in women that Kegel did his study, which is a whole different thing than just randomly squeezing if you don't know where the part is. So that's when an internal sensor in the biofeedback units or manual facilitation of the muscles can come in handy so that you're actually making sure that they're doing what you think they're doing and doing it well, and then can learn how to put that into normal activity. Because you didn't have to teach your kid to do Kegel exercises so that he could pee well. But what he did was a lot of half kneeling and squatting and sit to stand and up and down off the floor and normal functional activities. That's when those muscles are supposed to just work automatically. What we really do in therapy is get them to work automatically again so they can not have to think about them.
Yeah, I'd say that's common for any muscle, though. I mean, most of the problem that we see with manual therapy is that there's a problem with too much tone, and it's harder to re-educate the patient how to let go of the tone. It's harder to inhibit the tone rather than facilitate it. But yeah, that's definitely a misconception with the pelvic floor.
And there's the obturator and the coccygeus. There's so many other muscles than just the levator group. So there's more to it than just squeeze and tighten.
Right. I did see an interesting study. I think Julie Wiebe shared it with me that Asian women had better developed pelvic floors because they squat more.
Yeah. When we come back up to stand, that's one of the most natural ways for it to contract automatically. So I think probably sitting in ergonomically correct chairs for hours at a time doesn't do our...
Yeah, when I taught in the Philippines, all the females there were able to bust out an overhead deep squat like they were, you know, 5 years old. It's pretty awesome.
It is. We should do that more.
We should.
It is good to contract your pelvic floor when you want it to. It's better if it does it automatically without you having to think about it. And I will irreverently say that if you went to the gym and you did bicep curls and left, you would not call that a good upper body workout.
Right, so it sounds like the pelvic floor is more like the transversus abdominis. The more you study of it, the more you find out that it should be more reflexive and that you should fix sometimes the cause of it being dysfunctional versus just sucking your belly button back and trying to create that active brace when that's not the function of the muscle.
Yeah, why isn't it working normally? That would be a better question than here's how you squeeze it.
That's a great question. Do you have an answer for us?
Every patient's different. A lot of times it just forgets. Sometimes you end up, childbirth can wreck a little havoc in there, and it needs to be retrained.
Pain can also inhibit, right,
pain,
Sandy?
Can inhibit hugely, yeah. And so can constipation. So you know, if you have a chronically constipated person, their poor little pelvic floor's been trying to work overtime. That's unfair to ask it to stay healthy in those conditions.
Yeah, that sounds terrible. But you saying that, I just another movie reference. Since you went airplane, I'm gonna one up you with your airplane reference, the Dumb and Dumber reference. Oh. I don't know if you guys remember at the end when he gave him too much laxative. And the reason I bring that up is because I saw the preview for Dumb and Dumber 2. And
oh, that looks terrible.
That looks like the synonym of constipation. That's what that looks like.
Yeah, yeah. I contracted my pelvic floor when I saw that. I was very threatened by the trailer.
Good functional use of that movie.
Yeah. Just show patients that movie if you need
to. Then you're supposed to learn and not do it again. So
I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it without contracting my abs. My wife used to have me practice that all the time. I was like, what? I'm not supposed to contract my abs? What, my abs aren't connected to my pelvic floor? Come on.
They work in synergy.
So your wife's been training you for a long while, huh?
Well, she's just like, hey, can you do this? I'm like, well, yeah, sure. And then, like, I just couldn't do it, like, independently, you know. It's very much together.
It's a trick. It's like, you know, closing your eyes and touching each finger really fast. Yeah. That's a nice trick. But you also have to be able to use them all when you pick a glass up. So there's a lot more elegance to it.
The bar trick, Urson. You gotta learn how to do it.
I guess so.
We'll practice in person at CSM. We'll just find a bar. You guys can all.
Someday, if I ever make it to a CSM, everyone just expects me to be at all these things, but I'm actually blogging. I'm on social media, but I'm not there.
You're not actually there?
No.
He has a lackey walking around with a Google Hangouts phone.
Yeah, I'll just
watching everything.
Yeah, that would work. It could be Eugene.
Digital Urson.
I'll go on FaceTime, and you can just hold me up to people.
I could see it now. I was at that session. It was great.
I was, yeah.
Done. I'll buy my tickets right now.
I snuck in.
I'll bring Airplane and Dumb and Dumber on Blu-ray. We'll have a go of it.
We'll have a party.
All right. Well, I think that was a great bit of information for the pelvic floor world, which is pretty much everybody, right? This is information that regardless if you work in women's health or not, this is what you need to know.
Pretty much everyone has a pelvis.
So, Sandy, where can our listeners find you if they have questions for you, if they want to ask you some movie trivia?
or anything about Breaking Bad, because clearly I'm an expert. I am at Entropy Physiotherapy in Chicago. My email is sandy@entropy-physio.com.
How about social media?
Social media, Twitter is where I live, and that's just at Sandy Hilton PT.
And I just actually followed you as we were doing this podcast. I'm a multitasker.
I silenced my phone and put it away. I follow directions.
Well, that's good.
Typing on my computer, so I'm handicapped.
This was a much quieter podcast.
It was. It was very, very good. Good, steady flow. No pun intended.
Nicely done. Well,
thank you.
But we could stop the flow at any time we want.
You can. Yes. Just don't do that in action. It's a nice test, but you don't want to do it regularly.
The flow is strong with this one. Nice. I think we need to finish before it gets completely out of hand.
That's good. See, and that's why pelvic health is so much fun, because you get these kind of jokes every day in the clinic. You can tell all the potty jokes you want, and they're appropriate.
Right. That sounds like talking a magical sex, world to me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Urination. It's sex, activities of nightly living. Yeah,
exactly.
A&Ls are very important.
That is actually, if you were going to go to CSM, I'll plug it. We are having a speaker in the section of women's health, and the first session, first day is called Sex is an ADL 2.
Sign me up.
There you go.
You're probably the only guy there.
No. Oh, my goodness. I hope not.
No, I know.
Well, then I'll be the happiest guy there.
You'll be the happiest guy in the room. Smartest guy in the room.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
If he's the only guy, then yeah.
Way to catch up to that one. All right, guys. Any closing questions or remarks?
No, that was great. I had fun. Thanks for coming on, Sandy. It was great It's great to finally hear you. I still don't know what you look like when you're moving, because all I ever see is an avatar. But...
As an avatar? Yeah, I'm much like that. I'm sort of like a sloth.
Yeah. This actually is live video. You just haven't moved for like 30 minutes.
She's got an impressively stable.
Yeah, she's very stable.
Very stable.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, great information, Sandy. Absolutely. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us. For our listeners, we'll post all of Sandy's information on our website at therapyinsiders.com. So check us out. Again, Dr. E's blog, themanualtherapist.com. And leave us a review, a comment. We've been really enjoying the emails that we've been getting and some of the positive words and the comments. So we're building a bit of a list of things to talk about in future episodes, and we'll try to cover questions that you guys have brought up. So again, thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you in a week or so.
All right. Thanks, guys.
All right. See you later.
Bye.